Hello and welcome to episode number 41 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty here in Champaign.
I'm Robert Rosenthal in the land of the Golden Girls.
I tell you what, today's weather, or this week's weather, not too shabby compared to Florida, let me tell you.
I don't even know.
It's spring-like. What?
I don't even know. I thought it was raining. Is it raining there?
No, it's sunny and beautiful today.
I need to feel like it's raining there, and I've escaped it to the beautiful beaches of Florida.
I mean, you do have a beach. We don't really have a beach here.
Speak for yourself.
It's just more that
Lake of the Woods in Mahomet. Go ahead. Sorry, I'll stop.
Or Homer Lake. Yeah, there you go. But let me tell you, life here is a beach. That's for sure. Robert is on a working vacation in Florida. I'm here inside the Armory on the campus of the University of Illinois. And our producer extraordinaire is Mazen Maisie. How you doing, Maisie?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Fabulous. Should we... Hey, now, here's the trick. Mute Robert's headphones so he can't hear. And I can ask you, do we tell him about the mishaps with the eye while we were setting him up? Is this like the... Is this like the Brady Bunch where the vase breaks and we just glue it back together and see if nobody notices? Was that a Brady Bunch episode?
You can't mute it.
Probably.
Because I was watching. Like, I had already I hadn't logged in with the sound yet, but I had already logged into the video. I watched it fall. I made a sound on my end when I watched it fall.
Look, this was my chance to be in charge of the eye, and we can't let him in too soon next time.
There's
That's
a
the problem.
That my noise was.
Was it me?
My baby! Or something of the sort. When I saw it go down.
Well, it's back together, and it's beautiful. It's perfect.
And only the flimsy plastic pieces fell off. It's still functioning.
Don't say flimsy around it, it can hear you.
Thursday night tonight marks the start of the NFL draft. We've got some Illini who could get drafted this weekend, so we are going to discuss that. Also, the retention is confirmed for another basketball team. We will discuss that. A milestone victory on the diamond and good events happening this weekend on campus at the U of I. Sound good to you, sir?
Sounds good to me.
Here we go. I'm gonna do this in an expert way. I'm gonna light the eye, and we're gonna get going. It's a beautiful eye. People are saying they've never seen anything like it.
People are saying that I look relieved that it actually lit up. Because I was a little worried for the last 10 minutes.
Before we get off the beautiful spring weather, I've got a question, and I need Maisie's help here. I'm on my way in, and I see some young people wearing jean shorts. And I immediately thought, is this 1993 again? Because I wore jean shorts. I was so glad when the day came in my life when I realized I don't have to wear jean shorts.
Here's the thing. I can't remember a point in my life where jean shorts haven't been a thing.
That's a
For
great
23 years, because I wore them when I was little. I feel like there was never a point where I stopped wearing them.
Are you talking jorts that go down to the knee? Are you talking like...
Yeah, more like...
Oh, you're talking down to the knee.
Not quite, but like mid-length. Not like just women's jean shorts.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they're more like... This was more, I don't know, what do you call it, mid-length?
Yeah.
Like a regular sized pair of shorts that are jeans.
Gotcha, okay.
I'm right here looking at this window toward the beach here. And pretty much every person... Every female walking to the beach is wearing their swimsuit plus jean shorts. So we're not talking about that. You're talking about...
Okay.
You're talking,
we're
in,
talking
the, in
long
the short
shorts.
Category.
Gotcha. Okay. That is a thing. Again, I think it has been for... I think maybe the end of my time in high school. And now that vintage is coming back and people are collecting those types of clothes, they are huge right now. Everywhere, men and women, the giant jean shorts are back.
Why? I mean, in what world do you go, hey, it's short weather here. I'm going to pull up a picture. Hang on just a second.
It's the vintage. It's big. It's
yeah,
unique.
Here we go. Can you pull that up? Do you see?
Yeah, we're up.
What, in what world do you go, yeah, that it's shorts weather today. Let's throw that on.
You're very right about 1993. Like in the summer of 93, I worked at a restaurant at a lake, at a resort. And we wore basically t-shirt of the restaurant and jorts like every day. So
is that what I just pulled up? Jorts?
I mean, I would call that a jort. Easy, you tell me what your generation says. But
sorry for the audio only here.
A long jean short there is a jort to me.
I agree with that. But I feel like jorts are more so you yourself are cutting the jeans into shorts.
Interesting.
But that could just be my take on that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But they are back. I don't own a pair personally. None of my roommates own a pair, I don't think, but they're back.
I mean, if they were moisture wicking, maybe I would have them, but why in a warm weather you want to wear those? That just looks it's uncomfortable. There was always that guy on the pickup games too that would wear them.
I do remember, like, after I got out of college, this is like maybe 97-ish, I went out with some friends in St. Louis to some bar, and one of my friends pulled me aside because I was wearing jorts and was like, gone. Those are out. Don't wear them again. So I had to be told, like, yeah, we're beyond the moment of the jort.
Well, pull them back out, Robert, because they're back.
Somewhere in a drawer. They've been sitting for 30 years waiting for this moment.
I had a few different pairs, different shades of blue, like the dark blue jean and then the regular blue and then the light blue, depending on the occasion, I guess.
Okay, so if jorts are back, how about the woven belt that would, like, you'd let it, like, tie it and then, like, let it dangle down? That was a big part of jeans and jorts in 1994. Is that anything still a thing, not a thing?
I would say not as huge as the jorts, but I think that you'll sometimes see them.
I could look very retro early 90s if I pulled off that look, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Good.
One more thing. Maisie, we checked in with Ella. So Ella is running the half marathon, and so am I. Ella is running the half marathon with significantly less training than I'm doing because Ella is way more in shape. So I have to, like, work for this whole thing.
Right.
But you and all your athleticism, we've talked about you track and field and what else did you play? You were volleyball?
Volleyball, growing up gymnast.
That's right. But not so much for you and the, steady state cardio?
Yeah. No, I wish. Good for you two for running the half. That's huge. I wanted to so bad in college. So, you know, I would try training, but I cannot do more than a mile without feeling like I'm going to die afterwards or during, I should say. I like the feeling of running afterwards. It's just more, I can't do more than a mile and I wish I could.
Well, if you can flip on 6-inch wide balance beams and all the other things you can do, you know, long jump or triple jump.
Yeah, you would.
I mean,
think.
That takes skill, practice, training.
Yes, that's why I wasn't in track. I was in field. I ran the least amount possible into a sand pit and just jumped, and that was my running. That's it.
I walked 4 miles on the beach this morning. Is that anything? Anyone?
That's
that counts.
Great. That's. Walking is one of the best exercises.
Let me tell you, walking on the beach when it's a little soft is a lot.
Yeah. Like, you get some muscles firing in there that you didn't know
yes,
you had.
Yes, exactly. Just to push off once your foot sinks, and newsflash, I sink a little bit on the beach. When your foot sinks a little, there's some There's some strain going on there. Like, my wife and I went for a walk a few days ago, not on the beach. Easy enough. 3 mile walk in the morning, no big deal. Walking on the sand, that's a different story.
Yep.
All right, let's get to it. Tonight the draft starts for the NFL. And I don't know if we're going to hear, I don't think we're going to hear any, we'll hear any Illinois names tonight. But should hear some names. And I don't know that you and I have ever talked the draft before.
No.
There's some people that really get into the draft because they really get into the NFL and what team is what. Does it interest you at all as an Illini fan with where the Illini players get drafted?
The where doesn't interest me, except that
I'm at what round?
Yes. My Friday will be, does Gabe get picked today in the second or third round kind of thing. It was the same with Pat Bryant last year. The question for the second and third round is, I think Gabe's a top, you know, the, whatever. They're right around 100 picks in the first three rounds when you add the compensatory picks and all that. So I think Gabe is a top 100 player in this draft, which means he would go before Saturday. So, so that's kind of my focus, is find the guy and make sure they get picked in the right round. And then I'll be constantly checking my phone on Saturday to see if some of these guys get picked late rounds. Obviously, I think they all should, but never works that way.
I mean, there's all kinds of lists that you could go find, but The Athletic has him as the 49th best overall player in this year's draft and the 11th best edge rusher.
Yep. So and there's always that thing where, like, there's a rush on one position, you know, like a run on the bank kind of thing, and suddenly the top eight edge rushers are gone. And people who were thinking third round for edge start going, oh, man, we better grab our guy now kind of thing. So it could happen for Gabe. I'd love to see him be a second-round pick. I think he's a second-round pick, but we shall see. He better go on Friday.
So later on tonight, Fernando Mendoza may be the first pick. He certainly should be the first quarterback taken. And apparently, Kurt Cignetti also has spring practice scheduled at the same time, which people are saying is a very Kurt Cignetti thing to do.
It probably is, yes. Yes.
I just wanted to remind you that Indiana, you know, had a really good quarterback.
Did you see my face? Did you see my, yeah, I just, see your my face. Just like the bitterness of, like, just not fair. That, like, I mean, kudos to Cignetti, but he went out and found the best QB in the portal 2 years in a row. Still bothers me. Next subject.
Well, yeah, okay.
We can still talk draft. How about not Indiana?
Yeah. All right. Well, there was a meet availability this week, and how about Illinois' quarterback who could get drafted?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, let's take a listen to the prospects of Luke Altmyer. Well, Illinois' draft prospects from the perspective of head coach Brett Bielema, and then specifically. A little bit more on Luke Altmyer here first up.
I think he, you know, like probably four or five, you know, there's no doubt in my mind Gabe's probably going to be our first. I think JC will be our next off the board, probably by Geske after that. Then we probably have a handful of guys between Luke Altmyer, Tanner Arkin, Miles Scott, a possibility of a couple others that are probably in that, you know, mid to late round draft guys, if not free agents. So, what I have found both in this business and then on the other side of it in the NFL, a lot of times teams that like kids in those fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, or even going to fourth round, they keep it to themselves. They don't want other people to know it so that they can kind of surprise people, including the players on draft day. So I really don't. I mean, I have information that, you know, a lot of teams have called, but I've even learned this now. I have guys that I think I'm very close with in the NFL. They'll call me. They'll ask about one or two guys, and then they'll say, oh, yeah, plus I want to – what do you think of this guy, right? So they're trying to kind of hide it because they know that I'll say things as well. So I just think Luke's going to, you know, one thing I've told him, my wife and I and my two daughters, I took Barry Lunny with me, Art Sikowski. We flew to Luke's draft party. He had a draft party this past Saturday. So Saturday I hopped on a plane about 4:30 and went to Luke's place and saw him and his his parents in a really special moment. He didn't know we were coming, so I just think that kid had given me so much over the last 3 years. To give him that moment was pretty cool. So it's not how you get somewhere, all right? It's about once you're there and what you do with it, and I think I'm going to tell that to all those guys that are kind of in that ballpark.
When you think about it, when he first came in, did you think he had an option to be where he is now? Were you hopeful? Tell me what your thoughts were.
Honestly, I was very impressed with his arm talent, but he didn't have a lot of film out there. We had watched high school film. One of my best friends in life is the video coordinator at Ole Miss, and when I called him about him, he's like, well, I don't know what he can do as a quarterback, but I know he's the baseball coach of my son's Little League team, right? And spoke about the value he is as a person. So I knew we were getting a great person. But I will tell you, this is one that I'm going to bring it up next week in Dallas. So for the first 15 years of my college coaching career as a head coach, I was allowed to go in the homes of all the kids that I had recruited or signed. And going a home visit this morning, I did an interview with a Wisconsin reporter, and they asked me about two guys, Melvin Gordon and Chris Borland, two guys going in the Wisconsin Hall of Fame. And one of my favorite stories to tell them was my two home visits with those kids. And, you know, after being in Luke's home on Saturday night, seeing the environment he came from in Mississippi to come here at Illinois, I know his mom and dad had talked about it. Luke had made reference when he got dropped off here in Champaign, how much of an eye-opener that was. And there is no doubt in my mind, if I was able to make the home visit I made Saturday night 3 years ago, I think we could have helped Luke better in year one than we ever did, right? And it's just a stupid, moronic NCAA rule that they don't let us go into home visits. It's just idiots not getting together to talk about the calendar in a way to make it more appropriate. So I'm going to stand on that one until as long as I'm in this business. I think that's a really helpful device, and I would think we would have helped Luke better in year one if I'd been in that home before that.
There are a number of quarterbacks in the NFL that were drafted very high, drafted low, undrafted free agents. Some end up on the bench as second stringers, third stringers. Some become stars, and they all take different paths. Barry Lunny was in this media availability as well, and he's just said, all you need is to get there. And as long as you get there, then you have an opportunity to go shine and do what you do.
Yeah, it's funny how it was probably a month ago, Coach Bielema was, I think it was the Pro Day press conference, when he said something about teams need that guy when there's an injury, he's rock steady off the bench. They don't have the budget in under the salary cap to pay two quarterbacks a ton of money. So there is a role in the NFL for that guy who's a really good backup. And then he backed off of his words a lot. It's like, no, I think Luke can be successful, you know, as a starter in the NFL, and I don't want to limit his career and this and that. But he did say, like, there is that, let's call it the Chase Daniel position of, okay, probably not going to be a starter in the NFL, but can be a long-time backup and be ready and make the backup salary and be there and be ready and be steady and know the playbook and know the plays and not mess things up when you get in there and all that kind of stuff. So I could very much see Luke. I mean, look, it's what Tommy's doing right now, right? He just re-signed with the Patriots. Tommy DeVito has this reputation that maybe he's not one of the top 32 quarterbacks in the world. But if he's number 41, that's a pretty good life and a pretty good living. So, I'm really hoping that Luke can find a spot just like that.
Of course, Brett Bielema also mentioned J.C. Davis and Gabe Akis. And here's a little bit more on J.C. Davis. Brett Bielema says, might surprise some folks.
The time I ever saw him was on film from New Mexico. Thought he was going to be a one-year player. Didn't know we were going to be able to get 2 years out of him, but just was really excited about his length, his athleticism, his growth, his potential. One of the things that has really jumped out to me when we get these kids that are from, you know, good football but not really Power Four, right? They're not supported in the same ways, from just fueling, breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, right? The amount of soft tissue recovery we pour into these kids. And in that first year, you saw JC's body make a dramatic change, you know, not just weight gain but weight structure. So then when that opportunity came to get him in year two, when we flew out there to see him and his family in the Bay Area, was excited about the opportunity to present him with, that if he came back, I thought we could improve his draft status, and there's no doubt in my mind we've done that. You know, I think he's a guy that probably, in my opinion, will get some people will be surprised where he gets grabbed on Saturday or Friday. I think he is a guy that's got really, really unique length, size, and upside. He's been with us 2 years, but I think everybody realized what he can be. I also think he's probably a guy that's going to be drafted at a position he didn't play. I think he'll be drafted as an interior lineman. He's unique, and I think he can probably play both tackle and guard. But if you can get a guard that you feel has really good draft value, but you know he could cover up and play tackle in a pinch, that's a really, really good thing, and I think that's what he'll fall into.
Yeah, it's been a long time since there's been, you know, let's look at it this way. In the mid-2010s, went a long time. I think Nick Allegretti was the first, like, oh, there's going to be linemen drafted again. And this staff has really stepped up the let's find some guys either in the portal or JUCO that can be drafted. Obviously, Isaiah Adams went third round to the Cardinals. Now J.C. Davis, probably third or fourth round kind of thing that he's going to be. We've seen success with undrafted free agents like Palcho, you know, starting, what, 7 games with the Broncos last year and everything else. So that's probably one of the biggest things that's been stepped forward. Is this look, we all remember the famous press conference, right, where Bielma was talking about what he inherited on the roster and how his entire two deep was sixth-year seniors and fifth-year seniors, and how he's going to have to go find some linemen because he just doesn't have any guys cracking the two deep yet from any of those, you know, other three classes that he inherited. And so this has been a function of that. He, you know, did the Isaiah Adams thing. He did the Zy Chrisler thing. He did the J.C. Davis thing. He did the Melvin Priestley thing. You know, he went out and he found guys to fill these roles, and now, you know, you're going to see another one of them drafted. So it's a great, you know, just another piece in this chain of how the offensive line's been rebuilt and the, you know, defensive backfield has been rebuilt and all these things that now the proof of the pudding is these guys getting drafted. It's really, really, really great to see.
By the way, you mentioned Nick Allegretti there, and I saw that he just recently turned 30. Still got a pro career going. Remarkable guy.
Yep. Also my coin consultant.
He is. He is. What's the term?
I don't remember what the term is. I had a...
It comes up in trivia and all that, but you never... You know, it's like, oh, is it the coin collector or is that the stamp collector?
Yes.
I think the stamp collector has a fill in it. Yes. F-I-P-H-I-L or something like that.
I had a uncle who passed away 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and I had to go out to California and help clean out his house, and he had a bunch of coins, and I didn't know what to do with them. Like, are any of these worth anything? How do I even know? So I sent Mikey Dudek a text and said, is there any way you can put me in contact with Nick Allegretti? And he did, and Nick was overjoyed to be my coin consultant of, say, if you got this stuff, go to a coin shop. If you get this stuff, it's probably not worth much, but if you got this, or if you find one of these, make sure you hang on to it and this type of thing. So yes.
Did you get any of that stuff or this stuff or one of these?
There was a I don't remember what they were square coins. They were these tiny little square coins, like smaller than a dime. And they were gold, I think. And he was like, yes, those are worth something. So, you know, it's just impossible to
know. Oh, where are they now? I'm just kidding.
Part of his estate. So they were settled as part of his estate. But I, you know, how many people go through a loved one's house and, like, don't have the ability of that loved one to be there? I'm like, guys, don't just get rid of that stuff. That's the most valuable thing in my collection. You know, you just don't know what you're looking at. So having somebody else fill in and say, like, here are the things that matter, was really, really helpful for me and my family.
Next thing you know, you're living it up on an Antiques Roadshow.
That's right. That's right. I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I was hoping
I found
to hear,
these like, pair. I yes. found these pair of jorts. These worth anything? Oh, those are collector's item now.
94, let me tell you.
As Maisie said, they're vintage. Yes. Vintage is back again. Part of what I wanted to bring to our attention is that, I don't know if you knew this, Robert, there is actually still a football team for Illinois. I feel like this has been the most, football. I mean, maybe it's because of the bubble I'm in. Okay. Am I speaking for myself then? Because you had a Final Four team, and yes, I see you're wearing your Memorial Stadium shirt. You had a Final Four team, and the spring sports are going on, but it just felt like the media focus of attention was the run into the Final Four, and then as soon as it was over, it's about the retention and the transfer portal for basketball. Meanwhile, over here, spring football has been going on and maybe not getting quite as much attention. Maybe that's fine. I'm not even making a judgment on it. I'm just saying it feels like, oh, yeah, football. And not like, oh, yeah, football, where years pass. But it's like, oh, yeah, football. And there's a lot of things to pay attention to here.
I will speak for the 17 when I say that's been our experience all of our lives, even when Illinois basketball isn't good. So when it's a Final Four good, it's to be expected. But B, let's just be honest, not allowing any access to any practice beyond stretching and warm-up work is going to lead to less media coverage. I'm not like, I mean, it sounds like it's like a setup to get more access to practice, but they don't want the new defense seen until the UAB game. And so they limited practice to the least practice I've ever seen of a single team ever. And I didn't see one single play. I didn't see, like last year, they let us see a full spring practice when the coaches clinic was going on. We didn't get that this year. It's intentional. They don't want people to know anything about the new defense, but there's just, I mean, for me, there's nothing to write about. I can write roster stuff, and I can write, hey, this freshman looks like he's a legit 6'3 or whatever. But there's just not. They want to keep it quiet, and this is a function of that. Like, they want to limit any access to know anything about what's going on because they don't trust the reporters to not talk about scheme. And so I can't really report on, hey, these freshmen look great or whatever, my normal stuff. I've never, you know, gone to those fully open practices and reported on scheme and like, oh, here's what they're doing and here's exactly how they're going to set it up. I would never do that. I've always said, like, what I write is has in mind if PJ Fleck were to get a subscription to my website and were to pay to read these words, I would not want him learning a single thing about the scheme. So I don't,
but he would
share.
Even if he goes under his alternate name, JP Flock.
Yes. Yes. JP Flock. Look, I just want to say, like, oh man, this freshman linebacker's great. Or, oh boy, you should have seen this hit at practice the other night. I've said it a million times. It's why I moved to Champaign. I wanted to cover every possible football practice. And the year I moved to Champaign, they said it was shut down for COVID, but it would return later, and it has never returned. So,
okay. Also, the year you moved to Champaign ushered in the finest era of Illinois football in decades.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so, because, you know,
is it because there was access before and everyone knew the plays, or, you know, who but
no, I'm saying you're going to lose the argument is all I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. The moment Scott Croft said at halftime, so Illinois beats Nebraska in the first game of the Bielma era, that week zero game in 2021. Scott Frost went to the press conference afterwards and said, and I quote, "We threw out our entire game plan halfway through the game because they didn't do anything we expected." And Bielma beamed with pride as to, like, that's why we shut down practice and that's why we won't allow any cameras in and that's why we won't do anything. We're going to keep people guessing. And I said to someone that day, I'm like, well, thus ends the era of practice. I wouldn't report on scheme. I would have never said anything that Scott Frost could have used. I'm a fan, so I don't want to ever report anything. But I know that others, videotaping and otherwise, have shared other things that other staffs have used. And I knew in that moment that my favorite thing on earth was dead. No bitterness here. Just the one thing I love on earth that I can't do anymore. So,
well, yeah. I wasn't
it's not better.
Trying to take you to the place of, you know, you don't get access. I was just trying to say
talking about biscuits and gravy, and I would find a way to take it to I guess I just can't do my thing anymore. I guess I'm just bitter for the rest of my life because my favorite thing on earth is gone.
Okay. Could we widen this to, you know, all of us? I was just asking if you know, the center of attention has sort of stayed way more away from football than even it would normally be because of how successful basketball has been.
That's part of it, but I also believe part of it is there's just no – I could be writing 20 Cam Thomas is a beast articles. I just don't know if Cam Thomas is a beast yet. So that's from the way I cover the team. My answer to your question is no access means no stories means no discussion. I can't do my thing.
Well, then all we have is the word of the coaches on how things are going. So I will bring you some more of that so we can get a little idea of Kaitenhauser.
And then we can talk that? Biscuits and gravy?
There you go.
Okay, good. So what's it gonna take to make this all stop now, baby?
So Brett Bielema was asked about Kaitenhauser here in spring and his different skill set.
After doing this a while, there's these little moments where you see things, and I think maybe even just as a head coach, you might be the only one that notices them, right? But I always talk about volume reflects confidence. So I was showing the whole team. I always try to pull out maybe a half a dozen, 10 plays, and coach from them and learn from them. And 2 weeks ago, I was showing a play, a clip to the team, and it was a combo read for Kaiten to figure out once the ball was snapped, right? And I knew what he was going to – I hoped I knew what he was going to say. I know the way he's coached by Coach Art and Barry. And he just said it really loudly and really confidently, and everybody kind of looked around, right? And there was that little moment where I think part of what Luke Altmaier's success was because of what he was able to do, but it was really because of the way he made people feel. He just made everybody feel very confident. And that was a really big moment for me with Kaiten in that room, in that environment, that setting. And now each practice, I've kind of seen it come forward a little bit. You know, I would tell you, right, like I'm sure he's going to tell you, you know, 14 practices in it, he hasn't done everything right, but he has done a lot of things well, right? And he just, I made a point, there was a play, we were backed up, we practiced backed up on Friday, and he kind of came out on a bootleg action, and someone was in his face pretty quickly, and he got rid of it extremely quick. And I made a point, like, hey, the reason we went after Kaiten, one of the first things that jumped out to us, we talked about on film, is how quick a release he has. And there were two examples in that scrimmage on Friday where he just kind of got rid of the ball in a very quick fashion, and that it just reconvenes in my mind as a head coach why he's here and what he does, and what he does differently than our last guy. Everybody's going to want to take him to Luke. You know, he's a very good player. He's an accomplished, and he's a transfer player just like Luke, but he's got his own skill set that I think we have to take advantage of as coaches and figure out the players around him.
You know, the first thing I think when I see that is how he hints at it there. I just want to point this out to people of if people are wondering, like, what are the things that, you know, this is obviously a more disciplined team under Brett Bielema. This is obviously – there are less penalties. There's less this. There's less confusion on the field. All of those things. Everything's more crisp under this coach, regardless of roster. That's the biggest change people have seen. And he mentions it there, that they were practicing the backed-up drill. Everything at practice for Bielema is situational. So they're not just practicing plays. They're practicing plays at the two – and it's second and 14, what are you going to do? And please understand how difficult it is to turn the ball over here and what that does to us if you turn the ball over. So when we're backed up like this, you need to be thinking that stretch throw that I might not let go of, you're tucking that throw when you are at your own 2-yard line, that kind of thing. So just hearing that again, I just want to point that out to people. That is by far the number one thing that's different about this coaching staff versus others, is everything is tied to, you hear it at press conferences, we're doing second downs today. We're just working on third downs today. They're just working on third and longs. Like, a play just isn't a play. A, you know, spider 2Y banana is not just practiced. It's practiced when it's second and 12 from your own 2, and it's practiced when it's first and 10 from the other team's 36. And those are the differences that make this staff pretty special. So I know that's an aside. That's different from what he was talking about there with Hauser. But anytime I hear him say that, I want to point that out to people, that this is a head coach that believes every moment of football is situational, and he wants all of his players to think in that way of, like, I'm running this exact play 5 different ways depending on where I'm at on the field and what the down distance is.
Can we go back to spider 2-wide banana?
Why? The letter Y. It's the famous John Gruden play. Like, John Gruden always references that exact play. It's an actual play. But he always
references. Oh, spider 2-Y, not wide.
No.
But y. Spider 2.
Yeah. Spider 2.
Spider y number banana. 2, letter Y, and then banana. Mm-hmm.
Spider 2-Y banana.
Okay, well, what is it?
I could diagram it for you, but yes. It's a bit of a meme, if you will, that people always reference. If you reference a play call, you know, people are going to reference spider 2-Y banana.
Not the such and such with a backside Georgia reverse from Remember the Titans.
No, it is not that. Nor is it the Philly special that became the, you know, that became famous when what was it? Nick Foles went to Doug Peterson and was like, "You want Philly here?" And the quarterback calls the biggest play of the game in the Super Bowl. But yes. It is,
or in basketball when in Hoosiers when Dennis Hopper's like, okay, we're gonna run the old picket fence.
My team is on the floor. I saw that referenced. Who was the team that only had 4 guys? Oh, Nebraska.
It was Nebraska.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All those memes afterwards of, like,
just like Fred Hoiberg, the worst
team is on the floor.
That's the nicest team. That's Fred Hoiberg's team. For that to happen to them was sad, but. Going back to what we just heard from Brett Bielema, here you are, a guy who's like, I need access. And he just told you that your new quarterback is a vocal leader, that he has an incredibly quick release, that we're working on important game situations, and that while he hasn't been perfect, he's been very good. What more do you need?
Until I place my fingers in the nail holes.
Oh, jeez.
I need to see it, man. I need to see it with my own eyes. I need to know. I need to see the quick release. I actually did see the quick release. I actually did see the quick release while chatting with Coach Bielema at practice last week.
And he even and now PJ funny. Fleck and now PJ Fleck knows he has a quick release. Yes. He's not gonna, he wasn't otherwise gonna pick that up.
Yes,
I'm sorry, JP Flock.
Everything's ruined now because Casey Hauser has a quick release.
All right. Look, I want to give you some more encouragement, all right? Because you couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. The coaches, specifically Barry Lunny, said that he's very pleased with how the run game identity is coming together, all right? And so Brett Bielema was also asked about that, so let's hear his interpretation of that, or understanding of that, as I should say. And along the way, you learn kind of who's he's excited about, who your frontline guys are when it comes to the offensive line.
Well, I think a little bit of that is driven, you know, definitely by the running backs themselves, right? But I think just even Wheatley's brought, Tyrone's brought his own little flavor to the running back room. I think you've seen each guy kind of take a different step forward. I think Khalil, who's got obviously a lot of ability and skill set, has been a very impressive player here on certain areas that have nothing to do with the ball in his hands. Like, he's really done a better job pass pro, doing some things that you can just tell his awareness factor is through the roof. Aiden Loffrey has been a little bit banged up here and there, but overall has had a really productive. But the one that I thought was really taking a big step forward was Jordan Anderson, you know, who was away from it for a year. But play style and everything, I knew when I hired Weed, it would be kind of a nice little matchup there. And I think that's played out. Nelson Wheeler has been very impressive. But I think overall our front, our top offensive linemen, like the 5, 6, 7 guys that are working with that first group, they just bring a different skill set, you know. Both our guards, listen, I love Brandon Henderson and Josh Geske played a lot of really good football for us. But, you know, Behan's been a little bit banged up, so we've had two different guards in there. But, you know, Micah is a very athletic guard that can do a lot of things. Renfro and TJ McMillan at center, right, like probably didn't bring a little bit different skill set than Josh. And then two tackles, to be honest, Christian Martin, in my opinion, has probably been – him and Micah have been two of the biggest surprises. Not surprised. I wanted them. I went after them hard, right? But they've been very, very impressive through 14 practices and their desire to get better and all the things. I say TJ McMillan is playing the best football he's played since he's been here, and that's a really – you know, I don't know if I've ever since I've been here, to be quite honest, just because the first 2 years we were patching everything together with, you know, the center situation that we had with Kramer, you know, and then the next year with Pilstrom, like it was just kind of like we were piecing it together. I think we have two centers that can win football games in the Big Ten with Renfro and TJ. And, you know, that's a very comforting feeling to have as a coach, because I've kind of gone into every year since I've been here just really concerned about who our number two center is. And whoever is that, like however it plays out, is going to be very intriguing.
I wanted to ask you about your
thoughts there, sir.
Yeah, it's
Actually, here's my question. What do you hear when you hear a coach say, for the second time in clips we've listened, this player has a different skill set? Sounds to me like compared to the preceding players. Is that sort of code for we think we have an upgrade, and I'm not dissing or being critical of what we did have?
I wrote the other day, if there's a theme for the spring practices we have been able to see.
Oh, wait, now you're writing about spring.
Yes. If there's a theme, it is who are these guys? In yeah. that it is so different. It's just so, like, 18 starters back last year, 8 starters back this year from the bowl game. That's going to just be completely different, especially a lot of guys are held out right now. Xavier Scott's not practicing. Matt Bailey's not practicing. You just look out there in the field, and it's like, whoa, a brand new team. And, yes, I think when I hear him say the skill set thing, it's going to be we were this kind of running team with that offensive line, and now we might be that kind of running team. We were this kind of passing team with Luke Altmyer, and now we might be that kind of passing team. I do think this is going to be the biggest overhaul we've seen under Bielma. I mean, there was a bit of an overhaul 22-23. Obviously, the defensive coordinator changed and things shifted and everything else. But this is going to be a brand new team. There will still be the stars who've returned, and your Matt Bailey and your Xavier Scott, and you know, you're still going to see a lot from Khalil Valentine and Adrian Loffrey and everything else. You're going to have that same kind of thing. Colin Dixon's going to catch a lot of passes. You're going to see those same things. But the lines, the way the defense, obviously the scheme of the defense, and even the way Lunny calls this offense, I think is going to be completely different. And I do want to note this as well. The irony of me complaining about this is, as you can see, I'm in the land of Wicker down here in Florida vacation. And last night they had like 40 minutes of practice that was open, the largest window, the largest amount of practice being able to be seen by the media. And who is in Florida missing out on that? This guy right here. I got to get my fingers in so they're in the big box. This guy.
That's because how much this guy, even though he heavily follows, nay, obsesses over Illinois football, still knows where his most important priorities are.
Yes, this was an impromptu trip that my wife needed very much, and we are here, and I don't regret it. It's not like I'm missing, there's not scrimmages or anything else. I'm missing a practice that's open. So
if it was a scrimmage.
If it was a scrimmage.
See ya, honey.
Honestly, we kind of talked about that, of like, if they do open up a scrimmage, I would have probably flown back and then flown back down here. Just because it's something I could use when I write the preview this summer and everything else, it would be invaluable. But they're not going to let us see anything like that. So, c'est la vie.
All right. Well, enjoy whatever you consume of the draft. And I guess we will continue to be in a little bit of mystery land when it comes to Illinois football for the 2026 season. But
just the way they like it.
Yes. But based on everything that's being said, good things are happening.
Look, that's the overall thing here, right? This, people were coming up to me, it's like, oh my gosh, what if this scheme, what if it's this, and what if it's a little too, what if we don't have the defensive lineman for it? What if Hauk's the wrong choice? I'm like, then Bielma will get rid of him and hire somebody else. The staff, you know, Whitman has shown he will invest in Illini football more than previous ADs did. The coach knows what he's doing. If there's a mistake in a coordinator like Tony Peterson, he got rid of him in 1 year and made the switch to Lonnie. This is a head coach you can trust. And so all of this, like, oh, my gosh, what if? Oh, my, well, then they'll make a change and we'll be better the next year. That's the yeah. Ease.
So what are you so worried about? You don't need to see it for yourself.
Because it's my favorite thing on the face of the entire planet.
I told you, Kuytenhauser has a quick release. All right. A couple episodes ago, Shauna Green was here with us on the program. I do encourage you to check it out. It was a great interview. And she talked about that the expectation is to retain players from this year for next year. Well, just yesterday, Illinois women's basketball released our roster for the 26-27 season. And if you look at the graphic, or you just go to their roster, everybody who was in the rotation or played significant minutes is back. There are 12 players listed on the roster right now. 11 of them were on this year's roster. They also have listed Divine Burridge, who is the transfer from Louisiana State. That's kind of the one and only big public moment that the women's hoops program is doing, different in style than what we just saw with large crowds, beer chugging, and I'm back, and Michael Jordan type facts, press releases, and all the fun stuff that happened on the men's side. But either way, what Shauna Green set out to do, she has done. She has kept the core. There are 3 open roster spots. She said to us that 15 need to be filled. So I assume that means a few portal additions will still happen. But the reason this came out when it did is because the portal has closed. So no more players can enter the portal unless there's some extraordinary extenuating circumstance that happens. So your roster is pretty clear for the women's basketball team and for the most part for the men as well.
Let's just come out and say it should be the best Illini women's team in 25 years. Like 30 years. When was that? The Sweet 16? Like 97? Trying to remember.
I think it was 98.
98?
Maybe it was 97. Yeah, it's right in there. Back mm-hmm. when jorts were still popular.
Yes. Yes. That's it. We just needed the jort to make a return for Illini women's basketball to reach these heights again. I went on the record yesterday on Twitter just saying I think it's probably number 14, like 15. 15 is probably the target for preseason ranking now when you add a top 10 player from the previous class, plus you get everybody back and you have some stars and you've got, you know, a sophomore leap from Parchment and, you know, a really good Barry Wallace who should be competing for All-American honors next year and everything else. It should be the best women's team in nearly 30 years.
Yeah. The expectations rolling in for both men's and women's teams going into the season, and now a football team that has a lot of new faces that I don't know where you want to set the floor. Maybe that's a discussion for another day. But I think anything short of a bowl team and probably anything short of a significant bowl game would fall below expectations for the fan base based on what has happened.
Yep.
So to be looking how many months until football season? Four and a half-ish. And for basketball, 6 months. And to be knowing that you're in a place where those things could happen again, it's pretty incredible.
Really is. Yeah. What if it's another bowl win and NCAA tournament win for both 3 years in a row? You know, only team to do it 2 years in a row. So that would be incredible.
All right. One more item to note. Illinois softball head coach Tyra Perry, also a guest here on the program earlier this year, just reached her 300th win at Illinois with the defeat of Illinois State this with the defeat of Indiana State a couple of nights ago. So congratulations to Tyra Perry. Also this year she surpassed the 700 mark in her entire career, so a nice milestone. It's not been a great season for Illinois softball this year. They are dwelling at the bottom of the Big Ten standings, unfortunately, but that is a nice feather in the cap for Tyra.
What is the we may have talked about this a couple weeks ago and I already forgot. How many teams make the Big Ten softball tournament? How many?
12.
12? Okay. And there are
same as baseball.
And there are how many in how many softball teams?
17.
Who doesn't
same with baseball.
Who is it, Wisconsin as well?
No, it's USC. Don't ask me why.
We covered this. How did I not remember that? USC doesn't have softball. That's insane to me. They just let UCLA take the entire area? Like, Wisconsin not
beats
having
me,
baseball
man.
Makes sense. Makes total sense, right? You know, it's probably
yeah,
snowing
but they
in
do
Wisconsin
have softball
right now. But, yeah, that's yeah, that's a good point. Good point. That's crazy to me. What would
this weekend? I don't know. This we may never know.
Yes,
probably not Googleable.
Yes,
Googleable.
Anyway,
this weekend, both Diamond Sports teams are home. Illinois baseball hosts Nebraska. Nebraska's in second place at 15-3. By the way, their softball team number one ranked in the country. It just doesn't seem fair, and. But Nebraska baseball is here. Friday night is Bleacher Bum Barbecue. Barbecue for the first 250 fans, I believe. But fireworks after the game. It's usually the highest attended game of the year or one of them. And last I looked, weather will be good. And then Saturday is world's largest softball tailgate. It's also Illinois race weekend, as we've discussed. So the half and the full marathon and the 10K will be going on Saturday. There's other race events around the weekend. So I think it's going to be a weekend for the University of Illinois and Champaign-Urbana to shine.
Let me ask you
even
this
though
question.
Baseball just got thumped. Go ahead.
You're running the half and then Bleacher Bum Barbecue's the same day?
No, Bleacher Bum Barbecue's the night before.
Okay. Well, then that's an even easier question. What are you eating at the barbecue before?
I usually don't have time
running.
To go get it.
Okay.
The night before the race meal?
Yes. Are you going to do the morning fettuccine like Michael Stott? Or what are you,
yes,
like,
the fettuccine Alfredo. Yes. And I'm going to tape. I'm going to tape my nipples.
Yes.
What's that?
That's right. Just like Andy. Right.
It's the Light the Eye Fun Run for the prevention of
Pro-Am.
For you, it'd be in for a
Pro-Am
support access to practice. You know, every year, thousands of Illinois fans are prevented from seeing their football team. Join us in fighting for the cause.
We could run with that. I could make an entire shirt. Robert Rosenthal Memorial. No more.
What cause are you writing for?
Fun run, Pro-Am, race for the cure.
That's good stuff. All right, sir. Next time we're together, will you be back?
I will be in studio next to you.
And will you bring us some souvenirs? Maybe some seashells.
I did pick up a hold on. It's right here somewhere. There it is. Mm-hmm. There we go. So there, I picked up this little seashell. Look at the nice spiral on that thing. Grabbed this on the beach this morning.
A little Fibonacci stuff. Sequence in there.
What's that?
There's a little Fibonacci sequence in
I
that
I thought
thing.
The exact same thing. We're going to put it back up. Where's the camera? There we go. Look at that. That's yeah.
Now hold it up for the folks that are listening. Hold it to the microphone so they can hear the ocean.
Did that come through? Did any sound happen? I literally rubbed it on the mic.
I think that was a cocaine shark.
Okay. Good. Good.
All right.
We're off the rails.
Light the Eye is presented by the U of I Credit Union. Thanks as well to our sponsor today, Logic Coworking. Really appreciate the amazing Maisie Garrett and our hosts here at the Center for the Innovation in Teaching and Learning at the University of Illinois on the campus of the U of I inside the Armory. Good stuff coming again the next time we join you. Until then, thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time when we once again light the eye.